Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today. Hi, welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Today in the studio, yes, you heard me right. Today in the studio is Priscilla Vang. She arrived in the United States at the age of 2.5. A harrowing journey that began with her grandparents in Laos. To provide clarity, Hmong people are an ethnic group mainly living in Laos, Vietnam, and China. And during the Vietnam War, the population just really diminished, right, Priscilla?
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. So let me give you some background about Priscilla. Priscilla Vang is a multi-venture entrepreneur. 13 years of corporate accounting and tax preparation, and 2 degrees in financial accounting and tax accountancy prepared Priscilla to launch 3 connected ventures in 2016. One stop, 3 services, an accounting and tax practice, a payroll processing business, and a staffing firm. And today we are going to be talking about the first part of Priscilla's journey from refugee to citizen to multi-venture business owner. Her first business, Reward Staffing LLC, is a firm that fulfills staffing requirements for manufacturers filling entry-level positions and provides farmers with field workers. Farming connects Priscilla to her heritage of farmers who immigrated to Minnesota from Laos. This business provided Priscilla with enough cash to buy her accounting and tax practice, Enlighten Accounting and Tax Solutions, and Payroll Vault, a payroll processing franchise in St. Paul. So just to give you a little bit more background, Enlighten Accounting and Tax Solutions, LLC, is a firm where Priscilla provides fractional CFO services for small businesses as they grow profits to support a full-time certified financial accounting chief financial officer role. I don't know why I want to say accounting, but maybe because we're talking about accounting, right, Priscilla?
That's correct.
All right. So this means she offers bookkeeping, tax preparation, and tax consulting. She also prepares budgets and financial projections to aid in strategic growth decisions. Her focus is always on improving cash flow and net profits. Payroll Vault offers customizable payroll processing services to small and mid-sized businesses. Priscilla provides human resource expertise that helps small businesses hire new personnel and manage the human resource needs of those already employed. And you'll find out also that Priscilla has been married to Roger Vu for 25 years. They have 1 married son expecting their 4th child in July of this year. Priscilla expresses her creative side by making crafts, enjoying nature, and spending quality time with her huge extended family, which we're going to hear about as well. And she's a self-developer who enjoys coaching and healing others to tune into alignment and thrive in their personal and professional lives. So welcome to We Mentor Mondays. How are you, Priscilla?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me here, Nancy.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's been a long time in planning, I think years. We've known each other since 2018, and you joined one of the Elm Labs, the Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Labs, a long time ago, it seems like.
That's correct. Yes.
Like more than a decade, it seems.
It seems like that, but it's been a while, yes. And I know it's been a long time planning, but I think this is the perfect timing for the both of us.
Yes. And how are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling very blessed.
Oh, why do you say that?
I know that's just a beautiful word that came to me this morning. So I'm going to, that's my intentional words for today, blessing, and there's blessing everywhere.
Okay. And we're going to find them in our conversation, I bet.
Yes.
Oh, good. All right. Well, to understand you, Priscilla, we need to step into your generational roots and be reminded of what happened in Laos and Vietnam in the late 60s and 70s. Laos is located in the highlands, where a population of 300,000 to 400,000 Hmong lived. The reason the number is so much of a spread is I noticed when I was doing some research that the researchers can't agree on exactly how many people.
Yeah, because there's no documentation of people living there because Laos does not have a really good of recording the birth there.
Oh.
Yes.
Wow. So Hmong farmers harvested enough crops to be self-sufficient on the land they owned. Opium was a cash crop, which means that helped provide them income.
That's correct.
The U.S. recruited the population of Hmong to fight off communism during the late 60s. The Vietnam War ended in 1975 when Laos was overtaken by communism and 150,000 people escaped to refugee camps in Thailand and other places. Roughly half the population fled.
That's correct, because we were considered as enemy. You know, we were the traitor to the Laos and Vietnamese. You know, that's the reason why they do a lot of killing of the Hmong people, because the Hmong people helped the American during, it's called the Secret War in Laos. So the Hmong people, you know, were helping the Americans through all of that. So, you know, in order for them to survive and, you know, for them to move on, they have to leave their country and flee across the Mekong River just to stay in refugee camp so that they get sponsored from different country to go live in, you know, away from Laos.
Yeah. And because of the ties in helping out during the war, many Hmong found their way to the United States.
Yep.
So today, over 200,000 of this ethnic minority group have resettled. 90% live in the United States. And St. Paul has the largest Hmong population in the country, I read.
Yeah, that's correct. St. Paul is the first, or Twin City area is have the largest Hmong population, and the next second largest population is in California.
Okay. And then Wisconsin has a group too. I wonder if...
Yep, we're all over the United States. Wisconsin is the third one, you know?
Right, we could go down the list, yeah.
Yes, we know everybody. We have people live in Alaska too, and we have people living in Texas, Florida. So we're having our Hmong community spread out the U.S.,
yeah. Let me talk about during this disruptive time, you know, of the 60s and, into the 70s up to 1975 and beyond, your paternal grandmother with six children, she crossed the Mekong River to get to Thailand to a refugee camp.
Along with my parents. Because at that time, you know.
What happened to your grandfather?
Oh, well, let's go back to my grandfather. My grandfather died where he was kind of murdered when my youngest uncle, when he is 6 months old. So because my grandparents, they live up in the mountains and they didn't have enough, you know, the amenities like salt and the things that to do the cooking food. So in order for them to do that, they have to travel to the cities to buy those products. And so my grandfather took some, they call it opium. He had a little opium in him and just to go sell, to make some, earn some cash to purchase whatever they need. And so him and a group of his relatives, they went out to the city and they were hunted down by some traders that wanted those high drugs things.
Oh, so they had some opium that they were going to sell?
Sell, yes.
Okay. And then they were vandalized.
Yes.
And robbed.
Robbed and murdered. So
murdered.
Then,
God.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so my grandma, she was a single mom for so long, you know, and she supported the whole family. So that's the reason why. And then she made sure that my oldest uncle, the one that's older than my father, has an education. So it's just sad that my father didn't get no education. He has to work on the farm to support his older brother so that his older brother can go get the education, come back and support the family.
Oh, I see. Yeah, a lot of sacrifices made.
Yes.
Yes. And so this is on your dad's side, so your paternal grandmother.
Yes, my paternal grandmother.
When your grandfather was murdered, wasn't she pregnant?
No, she was not pregnant. She was, my youngest uncle was 6 months old.
Okay.
Yes.
So, oh my gosh.
6 months old. So, yeah. And, you know, her having all these little kids, probably under the age of 10.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. And strive to work really hard farming. And she does, you know, and she's also a really good, well, they, we never hear about this, but you know, that she's a really good engineer because she built her own home by herself and making sure that everybody, you know, everybody has a roof over their head, because in that time it's just only straws and whatever they have, like woods, but not very, don't have large equipment just to build the walls and everything. So everything's made out of bamboos and straws.
Okay. All right. Wow. So after your grandfather was murdered.
Yes.
How did your grandmother like find out, or?
It's just that they never came back. So from what I understand, my grandfather never came back, but they found, they hear stories, or they have some relatives that the one that didn't get murdered came back and told them.
Oh my gosh, yeah, how worrisome.
Yeah, it was. Because, you know, there's a couple of men that went with my grandfather. So a whole bunch of relatives, you know, some cousins, relatives of my grandfather went there. So yeah, that's how it was brought back. But that's very fairly little stories about my grandfather. Not very much, because, you know, we grew up with no grandfather. But just like my grandma, you know, she took care of us and even everybody, so.
Yeah. So can you give us kind of a brief description of life for your paternal grandmother and your dad, who was at what age when they went to the refugee camp in Thailand?
I think my parents were in their 20s. So we can go back to the war, because the war has ended in 75, but that's when everything went, they had to leave the country. So luckily my uncle who was educated, he works for the government. So he knows what was going on. So he made sure that my parents and my grandma pack and leave wherever they were living to flee, because otherwise they're going to get murdered. So he made sure they packed everything. And my mom just given birth to my brother, just 3 days old, and they have to flee, you know, their home across the Mekong River. Luckily at that time when people were allowed to cross the Mekong River easily. So my parents and my grandma and my uncles, they were able to get on a boat and go across the Mekong River, get there safely to the refugee camp. So then there, we lived there. My grandma came to the United States, but my parents didn't really want to come because my mom's family still back in Laos.
So where did your parents meet, and how long were they married?
They met in Laos. So
okay, and then they got married when they were
in their early 20s, or like 1920s.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's
no really, they don't have a, like I said, Laos don't keep track of birthdays, birth certificate. So they were born, there's no way, that's the reason why it's hard to keep track of how many Hmong people are born in Laos, because they don't have birth certificate there. They don't have no records, because Laos doesn't have a really good records, because they were not born in hospitals. Majority of these births are born at home.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. So who helped? Were there midwives that helped?
Yep. There's midwife that helps.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's no doctors, nobody, just midwife to help the woman give birth.
Okay. So where were the doctors located?
Oh, they're probably out in the cities. So it's hard to get these doctors up in the mountains, because a lot of the Hmong people live on the mountain farms on the mountain, because it's really steep mountains. So they're up high in the mountains or small villages. So there's always somebody who's really good at the housewives or the midwife. There's plenty of midwife in the community.
They must have a lot of then home remedies they use to take care of people when they got sick.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So, and the Mekong River is 2,700 miles in length. I was like, wow. So it's been kind of a fun education for me. It's the world's 12th largest river.
Yes.
And the third longest river in China.
Yes.
So it was, and it's pretty wide.
It is. And so, well, luckily my parents, they came, that's just when they're leaving that. A lot of people, like in the 80s, like cause right in the 80s where people were fleeing, a lot of people died crossing the river. Yeah, a lot of people were either shoot down or they used floaters to get across the river. So many people drowned because not a lot of people know how to swim. And so there are parents that are—
Floaters, like inner tubes?
Inner tubes, floaters.
Okay.
Just to cross, because that's my husband. In order for him to cross the Mekong River, he was an inner tube floater just to across the Mekong River. And they have to do it at night. If they do it during the daytime, they'll get shot and killed by the Laotian.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And once your grandmother, your paternal grandmother, so your dad's mother, when she got to, what happened with your maternal family?
They all stayed in refugee camp in Thailand. And then they were waiting for a sponsorship from different countries like United States, France, Australia.
They didn't cross the Mekong River?
They did, but they were on a boat. We were, luckily at the time, we were the first people that were able to pay people on the boat and get across easily.
Wow.
Yeah, because we were, luckily for my uncle too, he really helped us to get across. If my uncle wasn't in working for the government, you know, the army's government air group, we would have never made it across because he was luckily educated enough. So he's in that group and he knows. So then he was able to like, hey, you guys get out of here. And he was able to do that. The reason why a lot of people didn't want to move is because they don't have a lot of well-educated people to help them.
Okay.
Yeah, so then they didn't know until like later on when they're coming and taking over the cities, or not cities, but little town, and they start murdering people. And then people started being afraid and they start fleeing.
Wow. Okay, so once your paternal grandmother got to the refugee camp, mm-hmm. what was the setup like?
Everybody lives in little houses, you know, and there, you know, luckily the American was helping a lot. So there was like food being like brought in from the American people to support these smaller refugee people. And there's food and everything, but every day was a struggle. It was super hot in Thailand. They were saying that the weather there is so super hot. So a lot of kids get sick and then a lot of people passed away. And there are many times that when they're trying, especially small kids, here a story that many I've been heard is that when they're traveling through the forest, a lot of babies, they give them opium so that they don't cry a lot to make them, you know, sleep more so they don't cry a lot. Because if they make a noise, they will be targeted and then they will be the one get killed. Their group will get killed.
Yeah.
So a lot of them coming to Thailand with barely nothing and living in a refugee camp and, you know, just living day by day, just whatever food is available there, you know, that's how they survive. And a lot of kids not be able to survive there. A lot of them passed away.
Wow. And did they have electricity?
No electricity. But they have clean water. They have clean water. They gave
them. So they made like fires to cook things and.
Yep.
Okay. And how long were they there?
A lot of people stay there for like a year or two before they come to the United States. And there are people who staggered because they have family back in Laos. So they didn't really want to come to the United States yet. It's just like my mom didn't really want to come to the United States. So my grandma came to the United States. And then my grandma, you know, recorded. In order to communication back then, it's just recording a cassette and through mail. So my grandma was crying. She says, I need you guys here in the U.S. because if you don't come to the U.S., it's a struggle here. So then my parents decided, okay, we'll follow you, come to the U.S. So then they came to the United States in August of 1979.
Okay. Oh, so not long.
Yeah.
Okay. And so all your husband's siblings survived?
Yes, all of my dad's siblings survived.
I mean your dad's.
Yeah, my dad's siblings. So he comes with one sister and five brothers. So there's six children in my dad's side of the family.
And did they all immigrate to the United States?
Yep, they all immigrated to the United States. And the first place we came to was Charlotte, North Carolina. Mm. And then we live in Greensboro, Carolina.
And what was it like there for you? And you were very tiny, right?
Yeah, I was 2 years old. And it was a struggle for my parents because they didn't speak no English and no, they didn't speak anything or they cannot read and write because they were not literate and back in Laos because they never get it. They never went to school. They never educated. So it was really tough. And, you know, my mom, like she didn't know how to drive. So she had to like walk to work and it's like 6 or 7 miles and she's only getting paid like $3.75 an hour and she would wake up like 5 o'clock in the morning where it's still dark outside and walk and she would just hold her breath because she's afraid of what's out there.
Oh,
you never
sure.
know.
And yeah.
So, yeah.
That's courage.
Yeah, it is.
Right? Mm-hmm. And the desire to provide for your family.
Yes.
Wow. So your family got settled in Charlottesville and then eventually moved to Greensboro.
Yes.
And then what about your husband's family?
My husband's family, they're still in Laos. So at that time, my husband, they're still in Laos and they're still fleeing. So that's like in the 80s. They're still doing their thing. So my husband kind of, I think he didn't go to, in the 80s where he fled to Thailand. But, you know, that was back, Yeah, because he wasn't here with us, so we were in a different story time zone than my husband was.
Okay. And so where did you and Roger meet?
We then moving in St. Paul. So the journey of moving in St. Paul. So we moved in St. Paul of December 1987.
1987.
That's
okay.
When we moved to December of 1987, when we moved to St. Paul, Minnesota. And then that's where I met my husband, Roger, in St. Paul.
And your grandmother then moved with you?
Yes, my grandmother moved before we did. So my grandmother came to Minnesota because my first uncle, they lived in Minnesota. After they lived in North Carolina, they moved to Minnesota. The reason why they moved to Minnesota is because there's more opportunities here.
What about the Milwaukee, Wisconsin? Were you there too?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Let's back up to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My grandma, because we're living in North Carolina, there was no resources, no fundings and no resources. So my grandma was too old to work. She was, you know, she couldn't, there was no support for her. So Milwaukee, Wisconsin was the first support to be able to, for her. So that she went to, we moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, so that my grandma would be able to have some, you know, be on welfare and have some support for her because she couldn't afford a place for my three younger uncles that are still not married. You know, They're still under her care. So we moved there so that she can get welfare so she could financially support herself.
Yeah.
And then from then on, we moved to St. Paul, Minnesota is because of the farming industry.
Yeah.
It's easier for her to get farming here and to get lease farm here and farm and grow produce in here. Back then in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, they're still behind. They're not as quite as up to date as St. Paul, Minnesota.
Okay. And so all your dad's siblings?
Yes. They all live.
They all live. They all moved together.
Yeah, we all moved together. So they all lived in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Okay. And then how old were you when your parents moved here?
I was just probably in, I think, second grade.
Okay.
Yeah. I think either second or third grade, I remember. No, I think about, second or third grade when we moved here. So I was still in elementary school and we were still going to school and helping my parents to get us into a school near where we lived.
Wow. All right. And in your family, so you're the second eldest.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Of how many siblings?
Seven of us.
Seven of you.
Yep. Four boys and three girls. So I'm one of the three girls.
Okay. And so going to school then in St. Paul, you were able to learn English?
Yes.
Okay. And your parents, your mom was not?
Both of my parents are not literate. So I remember at the age of 9, being the one taking care of the family, you know, taking care of the paperwork, the, you know, like the welfare documents and all that stuff because the renewal comes and my parents didn't know how to fill out the application. So I helped them through all of the applications, making sure the rents are being paid to the landlord where we were living at, taking care of my parents, making sure, you know, if they can't read and write, but at least I can help them understand, okay, this is what you need to do. This is what we need to sign and everything. So it was me taking responsibility and growing up really at a really young age, growing up much more faster than everybody else, making sure that my families are taken care of, making sure that everything is, the bills are paid, making sure that, you know, my brothers and sisters, they all go to school and, you know, they're younger, so they don't really take a lot of responsibility, but all the responsibility is fallen onto me.
Wow. No wonder you've got such great leadership skills.
Thank you.
What else? So you also became like the primary interpreter.
Yes.
For your parents.
Yes.
And is your grandmother still alive?
No, my grandmother passed away, so she's been gone for almost like 15 years now.
15 years.
Yes.
Okay, so when your parents moved to St. Paul, she moved with them?
She actually moved before.
She was ahead of them.
Yeah, she moved before we moved so that, you know, when they're moving, we were spending time at her place.
Okay. Because she somehow, how did she purchase land?
She didn't purchase any land. She didn't do anything. She just took care of my uncles and everything. So she didn't.
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah, she didn't do any farming. My grandma didn't do any farming. It was just my parents that did the farming.
Okay. Yeah. So they bought, did they lease or bought?
They leased.
They leased a farm.
Yeah, they leased a farm. And the farm is in Rosemont. So it's right Rosemont over there by the finery, near the finery.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then the original owner, then he sold it. So, you know, we started farming after he sold the farm. But we've been farming and selling fresh produce at the farmer's market for many years. We started back in, like, I'll just say 98.
Okay.
Farming in 98, yeah. And we sell at the downtown Minneapolis farmer's market every weekend, every summer. And it was really, I mean, we didn't, like I said, we didn't have a childhood. We just did work. We were at the farm and we wanted to enjoy life. At the same time, my parents taught us that, you know, we have to work hard. And, you know, luckily my parents were able to do that because otherwise we wouldn't have any school clothing when it comes to time for, you know, when right before fall began, school begins, my parents were able to earn enough income to buy us new school clothing and whatever we need for school.
Do you have any memories of immigrating here or crossing the Mekong? I mean, you're 2 and a half, so.
No memories at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. No memories.
Your parents share the stories?
Yes, they do. They always talk about it. They always tell, like, stories how the struggle they went through, how tough life was for them and everything, and how she, especially my mom, when she misses her family, because all her families are back in Laos.
Okay. Wow. So you felt like you didn't have much of a childhood because you were required to kind of mature fast and you were really responsible. You really learned how to become an independent woman.
Yep.
So what family member still, like, influences you today?
I think just my parents just encouraging us to continue getting our education, because my parents are like, you know, you don't want to struggle like us. You don't want to just to make ends meet and work low-end job. They want us to continue our education. They want us to grow ourselves, to build the foundation that we want to have, what we want to live in, the American dream, to have a house, to have a car, and have fun and travel. That's what my parents encourage us to do. That's why they keep encouraging us to go to school and take advantage of this opportunity. And it's really true, because we live in the land of opportunities, and there's so many people here that don't take advantage of it.
I know, we get a little complacent.
Yes.
Yeah, you kind of get familiar with your surroundings, and then, yeah. So what did you dream then, as your parents were kind of telling you about your future? What were things that were kind of ruminating in your mind?
You know, in my dreams, I would like to own a really nice, beautiful, big house with, you know, cars and travel and have fun and enjoy life. That's what I really wanted to do. So that's why I keep striving to do more and striving to grow more. I think that it's just building that confidence, building that strength to believe in myself that I can accomplish whatever I need. Because, you know, we grew up with our parents and we spend, but then we're like, well, we want this, we want that. And we kind of overspend ourselves. You know, we put ourselves into a lot of debt.
Okay. You know? Yeah. So when there's a lot of opportunity and you can have credit cards, I mean, there's a whole downside to having the credit cards, and you think you can maybe pay them off sooner than when you can. And I mean, we all kind of go through that, you know, with money, like just understanding the value of money and where to invest it or where, when you need it, you know, beyond, once you get beyond basic needs, you know, how to, you know, shuck away for the future. And
yeah.
So did you have any idea that you would be a business owner and that you'd get involved in, you know, finances?
Well, I've been doing accounting for a long time, and I did want to own my own business for a very long time, because when I was working in the corporate world, I feel like I was nobody. I didn't become who I wanted to become. I'm working for somebody and just, you know, 8-to-5 job, 8-to-5, and earning minimum wages, you know, little wages to even to support my spending habit. You know, we all have spending habit, don't we?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
We all wanted to buy whatever we want to buy, but we're like, oh, you know what? We have credit cards and we can do that. But not making enough money, not going where I wanted to go. And so I really wanted to own my business for a long time, because I see people that owns business, they strive for success and they have the flexibility. They can work whenever they want to work, and, you know, they could do whatever they want to do. So that was one of my main goals. And for a long time, I didn't have the confidence in myself to be out there and do that. And this opportunity came up in 2016. I said to myself, well, if I don't get it, do it now, I'll never, ever do it. So then I decided, okay, I'll take this risk and purchase this staffing firm to see what the next step will be.
Okay. And that led to purchasing 2 other businesses.
Yes.
Okay. When did you go through the naturalization process to become a U.S. citizen?
I did that in 1998. So the naturalization for me is really simple.
So how old were you about?
I was about 8. No, I was 20.
And so you were married to Roger at that time?
Yeah, I was married to Roger at that time. And that's when my son was just turned 1.
Okay.
Yeah, because citizenship in 98. But the whole process was really simple and easy. All you do is just fill out the paperwork and application, and they'll give you 100 questions. And for me, it's fairly easy because it's just about American history. And so they'll only ask you like the first, you know.
Well, you went to American schools. So you felt like you got that in your history classes. And
And then they only ask you the first, like, out of the first 10 questions. So if you pay attention to the first 10 questions, fairly easy. And then you go through the citizenship interview and everything, and it's really fairly easy. But for me, it's easy. But then for my parents, it was not easy because they never had the American history. So, you know, it took them 2 times before they even really get a pass because they didn't really understand the questions. And so you had to write a sentence because in order for you to become a U.S. citizen, they need you to be able to read and write.
Okay.
So that's one of the tests that they ask you to do. So they failed on that. But other than the second time around, after all the practicing and everything, they were able to make it through. So my parents are U.S. citizen and my husband's a U.S. citizen. So we're all proud to be a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, that's terrific. And how did motherhood influence kind of, because you were an early mom, so how did that influence kind of your career choices?
It brought me a lot of confidence in myself that I need to continue doing. You know, I went to, right after high school, I went to get my associate degree in office administration. And I worked for a couple of years there, you know, not making the wages that I want to make. And then I got influenced by my best friend. She's like, well, let's go back to school and get our bachelor degrees. So then I'm like, okay.
That's a good friend.
She is. Yeah. It was a really great influence because I'm so proud that I went back. And, you know, it changed a whole new process for me. And then I decided to get into accounting. So that's the reason I was doing business administration. But then I have another friend who does accounting. She's like, well, why don't you go to accounting with me? So then I switched my major into financial accounting. So that's what I'm like, got into the accounting field. So then I got my bachelor, my BS in accounting. And I didn't realize how well I did for my bachelor because I'm like, the GPA, I'm like, wow. And all my accounting classes are all A's. I'm just like so surprised, like looking at my, you know, transcript. I'm like, wow, you know, doing that. And then after that, I thought I was done with school. And then my sister done with her bachelor degree in accounting because I have a younger sister who also went in the accounting field. And then she needed a couple more credit to get her CPA. I had enough credit to get my CPA. So she was like, well, why don't we go for a master? I said, oh, sure. Why not? You know? So then we looked
around. Team approach. I like that. Yeah.
Yep. And then we decided, okay, let's look around. And St. Mary was our choice. And it was the best choice we ever made. But you know what? I'm so glad I went back to get my master in accountancy because it also opens more doors of opportunities for me. It opened widens my eyes, and you know, it just gives you more confidence in yourself that you could do a lot more.
So tell us a little bit about accountancy. Like, what does that mean? Like, I know from knowing you that you really help, you understand taxes really well.
Accountancy is more like helping small business with their financials, you know, because a lot of small business owner doesn't really understand their financials, right? To find a really good accountant, between a good accountant and a bookkeeper. Well, a bookkeeper is just a bookkeeper. You know, they don't go with the financials reviews and things like that. They just kind of do your bookkeeping for you, making sure everything is in the right category. As an accountant, you know, we do the financial review. We make sure that all the financial reporting is correctly, getting everything intact, and making sure that everything, the review with the client, you know, to make sure that they're understanding their cash flow, their profit and loss, right? Because there are a lot of people like, well, looks like I earn a lot of money, but I don't have a lot of cash in my account. Well, you have to look and see, well, are you collecting enough money from your fundings or reconciling to make sure that your clients are paying you? Because some of these small business owners don't keep track of their who's paying them and not. So that's why and it's also educating them to hire a good accountant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you have a CPA designation?
I do have a CPA, but a designation, but I'm not a CPA. The reason why I'm not a CPA is because I want to be able to be in the affordable round where small businesses start a business, you know, they don't need to hire a CPA that costs an arm and a leg, whereas I want to be affordable for them to help them guide to reach their financials.
Yeah, so you've become a fractional CFO or a a chief financial officer to hire.
Yes.
So this is to help small businesses really understand their finances, help them develop cash flow projections, and really develop some strategies that can help them grow in their businesses. And you educate them about being aware of their taxes.
Yes. And, you know, with me, you know, just because I don't have with accounting, I have the tax knowledge, you know, so that I can help them understand what's the best tax saving for them, especially when they're an LLC and earning a lot of money, right? They make like tons of money and they're owning a lot of tax at the end of the year, because sometimes some of them, the LLC, don't stand the concept of estimated quarterly tax payment in.
Yeah.
And I had to educate them that it says we have to work on a quarterly basis to make sure that we're making these estimated tax payments and so that you don't owe a lot of tax at the end of the year. But helping them converting into an S Corp, you know, they can run salary for themselves and save them so much tax dollar money, and educating them, you know, what's the best tax solution for them. And also, you know, they always come with a problem like, okay, can I purchase a company vehicle? I said, yes, you can. If you're doing a majority for your business, you can purchase through your S corporation, have it all deducted through your S corporation. Oh, really? You know, and then they're like, you know, like saving costs for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and this conversation has gone so fast, we're almost like finished with the first part of our conversation. So while we're talking about taxes, what would you like to share with our listeners about what you could offer them?
Sure.
To help them out.
Yeah, I can, if anybody would like for me to review their financials or their taxes, you know, I'm more than welcome to review with you, help you, and also sit down and help you understand your taxes, because you may go to a tax preparer and they give your taxes and this is how much you owe and this is what you do. And then I'll sit down, go through like, what do you make? How much do you owe? Why do you owe so much? You know, I'm more than happy to sit down with you and help you understand why you owe so much taxes in, because a lot of people just don't understand the concept of like, oh, they don't make enough tax payment withholding in.
Yeah, and it's a little bit more complicated when we got funding from the government, you know, extra money for those who, the PPP money, payroll processing.
The P is not taxable, so that's okay, but grant money is taxable. So the grant money they receive, you'll get a 1099 to report on your income, but the PPP loan is not taxable. So you can...
grant money is?
The grant money is.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The PPP loan is not taxable because they already approved. They said that. So you don't have to really, you could show that on your statement, but you don't have to show it as a taxable income.
Okay. So if you would like Priscilla to kind of review your finances and give you some tax expertise, she's willing to do that. Just tell her that you learned of her through We Mentor. And she will set up how much are you charging for that?
For this to review, it's
$225. All right. To review last year's taxes?
Yes.
And if somebody wants to go back another year to 2020, is that
I can go back 3 years because we can amend your taxes 3 years.
Okay. So you can amend taxes for 3 years. Okay. So I would suggest having Priscilla kind of getting a second opinion on your finances is really good, because a lot of CPAs don't even meet with you on a regular basis. So it's really good to have another perspective. And is there anything else that you wanted to offer?
Oh, and if anybody wants bookkeeping help or any bookkeeping review, I'm more than happy to help anybody review their bookkeeping too, because we want to make sure that our financials are intact before tax season.
Right.
Or people are slackers and they don't really want to look at their bookkeeping until like tax season or, you know, like, okay, things like that. So I'm more than happy to help you review your financials, your bookkeeping, so that make sure that everything's intact, everything's in the right category, so that when it comes to tax season, you're all prepared and ready instead of filing an extension. Because I tell people, like, don't file an extension. Once you file an extension, every year you're going to keep filing an extension. And you want to make sure that everything's right on task, right on top of everything, so that even just to review it on a quarterly basis, you don't have to review it on a monthly basis, but just on a quarterly basis, just to make sure that everything is in the right category, everything's in compliance, everything's in there. I'm more than willing to review that with you.
Okay. And is that a different price or the same $225?
That one's for the financial review. It's going to be $375.
The financial review?
Not
The bookkeeping review is $375 because that takes a lot more focus on the details. It takes longer.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Terrific. Well, that's really, really helpful and important to know and learn. Okay. So I would like to talk about in our next conversation kind of how you ended up getting involved in buying Payroll Vault, a franchise to do payroll services for businesses, and also talk a little bit more about your staffing business. All right. Before we close out, is there anything else you wanted to add about the first beginnings of your journey that started with your grandparents in Laos and their courage to get you overseas and into the United States?
I think that's pretty much everything that I have explained here.
Yeah. Okay. Terrific. Thanks for being here. I'm excited for our second conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thanks, listeners. Well, thanks for tuning in. I just really appreciate you learning more about our collective history of us United States citizens. And Mike Cabeas, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. And make sure you tune in next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a WeMentor lab because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.